Hi, my name's David Lankus, and I'm here to say goodbye. I'm here at the end to wish you well. You've now gone through a pretty long and torturous process, I'm sure, where you've learned about technology, you've learned about leadership, project management, whole new skills. Hopefully you've engaged with new people you didn't know before. Hopefully you learned to do things you didn't know before. Hopefully you feel confident now to go out and continue learning and leading. That's the whole point of iLead USA, is that it's about leadership. Technology is sort of a lost leader to get us into that conversation. Now, it's a bit ironic that I'm here to give you this sort of goodbye, and I think it's because I have a reputation for doing a little of the Baptist preacher dismissal things. But I'm actually not going to go there this time. I actually want to give you one final lesson, and it's going to be sort of an interesting lesson because it's actually about what I'm doing now. I want to give you a little lesson about speaking, sort of the key to keynotes. One of the things you're going to have to do, one of the things you should do after this, is take the great work you've been doing, take the great work on future projects, take the great work that is the story of your library and your community, and communicate it out, and give that story to others. And so I want to talk briefly about what it means to give a good presentation. And what it means, when I'm ever asked this, Dave, how do we give good presentations? There's one sentence. Speak what you know, connect with the audience, and take them somewhere. These are the things you've all been at, those really horrible presentations, those presentations where it's like, gee, there's an hour of my life I can't get back, etc. Hopefully this isn't one. Hopefully it won't take an hour. But the first thing that I always say, because people get really scared about presentations and standing up in front of crowds, I say the best way to get over the fear is to speak from what you know. If you know a topic very well, if you spend the time on a topic and you know it very well, you'll be fine. If you're going to demonstrate some technology, spend some time with that technology. If you're going to talk about the financial plan or the annual report, spend some time with the annual report. You'll be the one in the room that knows the most about that topic, and that will lead to a sense of confidence. The other is connect to the audience, that it's one thing to know a lot and then to sit there and talk to yourself, but you have to understand that your audience doesn't necessarily know that story. You have to connect with them on an emotional level and connect with them in such a way that you're using their language, that you're talking with examples that they care about, that you're expressing their values. Find something that connects with them. Find some way of sharing a story that makes sense that they want to hear. And lastly, take them somewhere. This is the one thing that really drives me nuts about librarians who give presentations, and that is we are very good at presenting the facts. We're very good at researching around a topic and giving 500 citations about something. But what we want to know is the opinion. What we want to know is what we should do. The last thing you want to do in a presentation is to sort of walk them through and explain a problem or an opportunity or walk them through technologies, et cetera, and then sort of at the end go, well, there you go, good luck. What am I supposed to do? Now that you've created this interest, now that you've created this awareness, what's the ta-da? What should I do at this point? Where should I go with this? So normally at this point, what I would do to speak what I know and connect with the audience and take them somewhere in an iLead USA presentation is I would talk about the cohorts that we just had, the in-person sessions you've just finished, the other ones that you did over the summer and the spring, and I would use examples and stories, and I'd tell funny stories about Andy and tell funny stories about what's going on in Ohio, but I can't do that this time. This time I had to watch iLead USA from afar, and it's killing me. So what I'd rather do is instead of connecting to the story that you've written here, I want to talk a little bit about my story, what I've been doing that year, and see how it can hopefully has led me to some lessons that may be useful. And I'm going to try and do it without being too self-indulgent, but of course, it's all about me. Now, this is me at the Cleveland Clinic in January getting all these wonderful electrodes hooked up to me to find out why I was having seizures at one point. And the good answer was, we don't know, and you don't have them anymore, and stop taking these horrible drugs. And this is actually an interesting lesson because what it shows is that one tends to find what one is looking for. When you're looking through statistics, when you're looking at what project to do, when you're looking at what the community thinks about you, what you'll tend to do is ask a number of people until you find someone who agrees with you and say, yes, that's it. So in this case, what happens is the neurologists were looking at my brain and saying, there's nothing wrong with the brain. And they, of course, missed the cancer that was growing 6 inches down below. And in fact, that's one of the stories that I want to tell you, is sort of what I learned from going through lymphoma. And I would love to give you a ta-da at the end that says, this is it now that it's behind me. But actually, the reason I'm not there is because I'm sitting waiting for a phone call in the next hour or 12 that's going to tell me whether I'm done with this or whether I'm going to keep going. So think of this as sort of a preliminary presentation. But here are the lessons that I've learned by sort of going through this life-altering treatment that I think applies to where you are, because hopefully you've gone through a bit of a life-altering experience. The first thing that I've learned is that service is much more than expertise. Service is much more than just knowing what you're doing or having a good collection or being a really good reference librarian or a good cataloger or a good technologist. A good piece of service is not, I know Drupal better than the next person. Service must include empathy. Now, I learned this in a rather intimate way, but I learned it when I was in the hospital the first time. And I learned that there's a difference between sort of how doctors approach medicine and how nurses approach medicine. And it became very clear to me because on one day I was sitting talking with my wife on a Friday afternoon around 1 o'clock, and a doctor comes in and the doctor says, well, you have lymphoma. And, you know, when you hear you have cancer, pretty much you sit down and you think, well, I'm done, right? You begin planning your funeral and figuring out what's going on. And then, without missing a beat, the doctor said, the next thing we have to find out is we have to get a bone biopsy to find out if it's spread to your bone, and we have to get to that lab in the next 20 minutes, and so we're kicking your wife out. And so they kicked her out, and they threw me on a bed. And what happened then was these two relatively diminutive doctors sat on my back with a very large screw and went in to try and figure out if my bone marrow was still there, and they certainly looked hard enough. And what hit me at that moment was that standing by my head was Carolyn, a nurse. And what Carolyn did, which just has stuck with me as a lesson that I can never forget, is with one hand she handed the doctor the steel spike, and with the other hand she grabbed my hand. And she stood there the whole time talking to me, seeing how I was doing. And at the minute they were done with the extraction, with the test, she let go of my hand, she left the door, and I found out later she walked and sat next to my wife and said, stop planning this funeral. We have plenty of things to do. Over and over throughout my treatment, I have found that it's one thing to know something, and it's another thing to know how to communicate something. It's one thing to know what's right or what's better or what's going on, and it's another thing to bring people into that process and make them comfortable with it and have them help decide. As librarians in library science and in our training and professional development, even in these sections, we spend a lot of time teaching you how to be good at something. Sometimes just an introduction, but a lot of it is to get you to realize you can get in there and play. And by tinkering and by playing with technologies and all these other things, you will get good at it. And what you'll want to have a tendency to do is to talk about what you're good at. And libraries for a long time have been very good at collections and materials and building collections and story time and buildings, etc. And we've sort of forgotten the empathy part of what we do. That a lot of what we do is we do to help people. We do these things to help people improve their lives. I often talk about the story that a librarian holds that helps them get through the toner cartridges and pointing to bathrooms and committee meetings. That story of when they helped someone, of when they saw someone's life get enriched because of their direct action. And when I ask people about these stories and I ask them to tell me these stories never end up and with I shelved the most beautiful book in the world. Oh, you should have seen the website I built. It's invariably about something intimately human, some connection, some lesson, helping someone find respect, helping someone find a job, helping someone find some new capability they didn't know they had. That story, that human-to-human connection, is an intimate part of what it means to be of service. Whether you're cataloging a book, whether you're shelving a book, whether you're doing reading hour, whether you're building a website, whatever you're doing, that human connection to say, not only do we know what we're talking about, but we want you to know what we're talking about. And we want to bring you into the process. And you are ultimately how we define success. If you're an academic librarian, your success is in the grades and the accomplishments of the students, not in the size of your collection or how well it's organized. Your success of a public library comes not from your tax base and how much you got on the last tax question or how many items you circulated. It comes from, is your community a better place? Did you take on major issues, be it homelessness, be it abuse cases, be it childhood education, violence? Did you tackle the big issue and make a positive difference? If you work in a school, did you help someone learn? Did you help some student know that they could grow up to be something much more spectacular than they ever thought they could be? That empathy, that ability to connect at a human level lies fundamentally at the point of why we're into library science, why we are librarians. It is not simply that we're good search engines. I hate that. It's not that we're really good at organizing and collecting and organizing and being this automated machine. What makes us amazing, spectacular, noble human beings that have a purpose on this earth is that we connect to a human need and we fulfill it. those search engines, those catalogs, those Drupal sites, those books, those materials, those story times, they're just tools. We're the value in that connection. So remember, service is more than expertise. It must include empathy. Now, once again, you don't go through cancer and not think a little bit about what's going to be there after you. Legacy comes not from one's actions. Now, that may sound counterintuitive, the idea being that, of course, what you do matters, right? So what are you going to say, Dave? It's what you think and the deeper thoughts? No. Legacy comes not from one's actions, but the impact those actions have on others. Once again, being brilliant in a quiet room isn't actually that brilliant. The idea of thinking out loud, experimenting out loud, playing out loud, working out loud, having impact out loud, living your life in the eyes of other people is important. We have to look at what is the value of libraries. When someone looks and thinks about in 10 years and they grow up, what was the impact their school library had on them? I hope it's about a school librarian, and I hope it's because the school librarian helped them. When we talk about why is this community better because we have this public library in it, I hope it's because we did something with the community, we partnered with the community, they felt ownership in it. In an academic library, will people remember the database schema you developed, or will they remember that connection to an initiative to help people learn, to transition new immigrants from first-time college goers to successful graduates, to alumnus who truly make us proud? Those impacts that we seek to have come from our impact in others. You have worked this year on hard projects. You've worked hard on them, and they were hard to do. You've spent time. You should be rightfully proud, but you're not done yet. Those projects, if they never leave these conference rooms, if they never leave these lecture halls, if they never leave this project, and they simply become something that we can put in a report to IMLS have failed. It comes in these projects being real projects. Over the years, we have seen people start businesses because of these projects. We found people who were desperate because they had lost a job find whole new fulfillments and new careers and new academic programs. We've helped connect people to social services. We've helped people connect to learning services. We've helped people thrive. That's the impact of I Lead You, and that's the impact that you are now take on. If this project is to have been worthwhile, it is not in what you did here, it is what you do next. Your legacy and the legacy of this project will only be fulfilled when we try them and send them out to the world, where we see how what people think about them and how we can make them better and learn from them. And the thing we have to remember is we can't do this alone. Cancer sucks. I'll be real honest. There's nothing joyful or fun about cancer, except the network of love that it makes obvious. The instant when people say, we're praying for you, we're here, we want to connect, when they start bringing you meal upon meal upon meal, like how much Big Ziti can you eat in a day? But the point is they're there for you and they want to help. This is the trick, right? It takes a network to make success. The network, which hopefully is starting right here and right now. I have talked to so many brilliant and wonderful librarians who have come to me in their darkest hours and said, I'm done. No one here gets it. I'm all alone and I have great ideas, but there's no one to help me fulfill it. And the short answer is, if that's true, you need to build a network. Either you need to build the network by finding another place to work, but more often than not, why are you restricting your network just to the place where you work? Connect with librarians across the street, across the county, across the country, across the world. Connect with interesting people regardless of their careers or their background or their education. Build a network of support that brings a diverse viewpoint. Have a crazy ideas list. A crazy ideas list is where you find interesting people, often in a position to help you with funding or position or policy or whatever, but not necessarily, just interesting people, that every time you have a crazy idea of a new program or a new thought or a new project or a new technology or a new whatever, you can send it around to this list and go, what do you think? You know what I found with those crazy idea lists? Very rarely do people come back and say, that's crazy. Oftentimes they come back and say, hey, that's cool, let's try it. Where can we do it? Build the network. Build the network because you're not going to get through this alone. There are going to be times when you don't have the resources, you don't have the stamina, you don't have the courage, you don't have the time, you don't have something. You need a network to pull you through. Turn to the people on the left and right and say, you're now part of my network, whether you like it or not, I'm going to continue to bug you. I'm part of your network. as you're struggling through whatever you're doing with I Lead You, come to me. Come to the folks in Illinois or Ohio or Colorado. Come and say, that's my network now. And sometimes that network's just there to go, I hear you. And that's okay. And that takes me into the next one. The next lesson I want you to remember is, you know, the Nietzsche quote, right? That which does not kill you makes you stronger. Well, here's the trick. Nothing in library science is going to kill you. We tend to make really, really big deal about really, really small stuff. And there's nothing like having a cancer diagnosis to show you just how small some of the crap you're dealing with used to be. So you borrow that. Use my cancer to say, well, at least I'm not going to die from this. That's the idea, is that think about for a minute what you're doing, how you're doing it, and understand that, you know what, if it doesn't work, we'll try again. Have fun. This is a have fun moment. So this picture of me, which is terribly self-indulgent, but this picture was taken of me about June of 2012. And it was sort of me at the height of me, right? I was about to go on trips, and it was right before all this wonderful stuff in my life was about to happen. This is me at the end of chemotherapy. Bit of a difference, right? I lost 45 pounds. That I'm up for. But I lost just about every piece of hair on my head. I lost these other things. It wasn't fun. And I'll tell you what, losing the hair on my head, I'm used to that, right? I mean, we look at it, it was going anyway. Losing my beard, I'm not terribly happy with my chin, but I can deal with it. But I'll tell you what, losing my eyebrows was tough, right? And so I had a choice. I could be bald and without eyebrows and sit there and go, woe is me and woe is me. But I had part of my network was my brother-in-law, who's a microbiologist, actually, and he explained to me what was going on, but he also had a hell of a sense of humor. In fact, at one point, he was explaining exactly, I had a low platelet count, which stops internal bleeding, going, this is what's happening, this is what's happening. And right after he explains it, I started getting this bleed right on my hip, frankly, right on my butt, where it started, you know, swelling, and then it got this big bruise and whatever. It was not a happy moment because you're sitting there thinking, is it going to stop? Now, leave it to my brother-in-law to suddenly email me and go, can I get a picture? I want to show that to my freshman. And I'm sitting there going, you cannot have a picture of my butt. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. But his sense of humor was throughout. So when I lost my hair, we started talking about why don't academics go back to having, you know, the old wigs where we could just use the wigs and that's how we could teach with our robes on and our wigs. And when he was over here for 4th of July and my eyebrows were gone, you know, my entire family picked up eyebrow pencils and we began art sketching projects, right? So we began drawing and saying, hey, now you can have a whole different expressions. And I swear I was going to wake up one day with my children drawing on my head as a new canvas. But the point is, library science is not going to kill you. What you try in these projects, if they don't work, try again. If that doesn't work, try again. If that doesn't work, try something new, because you know what? It's okay. Don't spend 3 years on the policy of something just in case it's going to work. Spend 3 years trying 300 different small projects and see which one works. Try it. Fail. Try again. Fail. Try again. That's how we learn. That's how we succeed. And have fun with it. This is supposed to be really hilarious and fun. I mean, if you can't laugh at it, you're doing it wrong. Last lesson. Then I'll shut up. Last lesson is don't wait for change. We all have grand schemes and plans of how our careers will go or how our libraries will develop, our five-year plan, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It rarely works out that way. It rarely works so that when you plan to do something, it's going to happen. When you plan to show up at I Lead You for three different sessions, things get in the way. Don't wait. Don't wait to come up with the project until you have all the answers. Because you know what? The minute you answer those, new questions will pop up. And the minute you wait, something else will get in the way. Don't wait. The picture here is of, by the way, a worker bee. Many people don't understand what a worker bee is. First of all worker bees are female. I just like to point that out for a moment. All the men are hanging out in the hive waiting to hang out with the queen. All the women are doing the work, just like in the real world. And I bring it up here because I actually, one of these closing I've given in the past, I went on this wonderful speech about the Arab uprising, the Arab Spring in Egypt, and how all the protesters protected the Library of Alexandria. And I told the story, you know, they grabbed hand in hand and protected the Library of Alexandria. And by the end of the Arab Spring, not one stone had been thrown against the wall and not what window had been broken. And I thought, you know, this is a big rah-rah moment. This is a big story. My students are going to love this. And they looked at me with absolute horror. And I kind of said, what's the matter? And they said, do I really have to be the librarian that sits there and deals with a mob of Egyptians overthrowing the government? You know, to be a good librarian, do I have to do something where I'm in these extraordinary circumstances, such as the dissolution of a regime? I, they told me, am perfectly fine being a worker bee. As a librarian, if you tell me what you want to do it, I'll do it. You tell me when you want to get it done, I'll get it done. I'm an awesome worker bee, but I don't want to be the innovator. I don't want to be the person who changes the world. That's not my job. And some people will take this even further, and they'll talk about librarianship this way, that somehow librarianship is full of introverts who don't want to go and change the world, that we're risk averse. Crap. It's crap. Stop it. It's not true. You cannot be a worker bee in librarianship. We don't have the room and we don't have the time. There may have been a time in the past when we could have had librarians hanging out just as extras in case we needed some superfluous shelving. Those days are gone. Those budgets are gone. Those staffing, that's gone. What we need is every librarian to make a contribution, every librarian to do something new and try it. Even if you're shelving and all you do is shelve better. Figure out a more innovative way to do it. If you're doing circulation, figure out how you can save 3 seconds on the next checkout and 3 seconds after that. That's innovating. The truth is that innovation is part of your job, right? And that what we need to think about is that with all of these lessons, we don't have to wait and we don't have to do it alone. We have the opportunity to soar on the willing shoulders of our community. Our communities are hungry for change. Our communities need us. If I can take one thing, one lesson, one crystallized moment and transfer it to you and say, think about this. Our communities, be they in a college, be they in a school, be they in a community or in a government or what have you, our communities are desperate for our help. They're struggling with debt. They're struggling with joblessness. They're struggling with how to govern themselves. They're struggling with how to know the truth in the midst of so many partisan voices. They're struggling with how to understand a world that changes so radically. And what they need is they need a partner in that change, a partner who looks at them not as a series of deficits, not as a series of problems, but who looks at their communities as the richest collection of opportunities available to them. Of a librarian who says, I'm here to help and I'm here to learn at the same time. That what we have the opportunity to do is do our job. Every day where we do our job, be it working in Drupal, whether it's working on technology, whether it's cataloging, whether it's reference, whether it's all of those things, by doing that and doing it well, and being willing at any point in that process to stop and listen. Listen to the dreams of your community. Listen to their needs. Listen to their wants. Listen to their desires, to understand that that is ultimately our collection. These tools, these books, these technologies, these buildings, these tools to get us to those dreams, that's not where we need to spend our time. Yes, we need to do them and we need to do them better, but we need to spend time being inspired constantly by the needs and dreams and capabilities of those around us. A 10th grader will someday run this country. An 8th grader will someday run this country. The people who we begin to shape now in our schools will someday be the government, be the business leaders, be the industry and philanthropists. Within our colleges, those freshmen, those sophomores, those folks will someday rule the world. Now, they can do it with us and see in our power, or they can do it without us. I hope not. Our communities every day, the man who needs a job, the man with a job, the woman who needs just some place to get some quiet, the children who need exposure to literature, these are the building blocks of our society. And they come to our libraries. And sometimes they don't, and we must go to them because we understand that those are the building blocks that are the fundamental tools that we're working with. That's how we're going to build and shape the world around us. And don't wait. Don't put it in a 5-year plan. Don't create a committee for innovation. Don't wait for a long-term strategic technology initiative. You may not make it. Or on your way there, you may get some bad news. And even then, don't stop. Even then, go through Skype and do it anyway. Even then, make it part of your vocation. Make it part of your inspiration. The true brilliant librarians aren't out there, don't come from where they got their degree, and they don't come from what specialty they have. The brilliance of the librarians that we encounter on a regular basis comes from their ability to understand and fulfill needs of people, to empathize, to build a network around, to understand that their legacy comes from those impacts, to look at how they make a difference. You have a choice today. Your choice is to say, that was interesting. That was a great project. I'll put that in my back pocket. We'll see if it's useful. Or to say, that's the beginning. That was step one. Just wait till you see what I'm going to do next. And don't wait. Do it now. Thank you very much. Good job this year. I look forward to talking and being part of your network in the future.